Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented to you by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres, and like every week, I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Altvader. Fred, hi, how are you today?
Hey, Carlos, I am fantastic. It was a big week for the Swedes and the Norwegians. Lingmuth, Norin, Pedersen, all won. You'd think it was a hockey weekend or something. We have interviews with the 2015 U.S. President's Cup team captain, Jay Haas, and our man inside the ropes this week is working overtime. He's got interviews with David Ledbetter and LPGA teaching pro Gene Bartholomew, who's in the field this week at Westchester. It's going to be a really big show, Carlos. Let's go.
Big show and a lot of things that we're going to be talking about. And on our practice range topic, we're going to be talking about this is the time now for the PGA Tour, and the LPGA is getting right now to the heart of the tournaments, the heart of the season, and we have plenty to tell you about it, so don't miss it. That's going to be in the practice range. But as every week, we're going to start with our backspin, where we take a look back, an overview of what happened in the major tours this past weekend. And let's start with the PGA Tour. I'm sorry. David Lingmuth parred the third play of hole Sunday to defeat Justin Rose and win the Memorial Tournament. Lingmuth closed with a 3-under to post 15-under. Rose birdied the 17th to match him, then par the last to cap a round of even par at Murphy Village. But David Lingmuth got three pars, and Justin Rose couldn't do it on the third playoff hole, so that gave Lingmuth the win. Francesco Molinari had the lead on the front nine, but was done in by a double bogey on the 17th. He shared third place with Masters champion Jordan Spieth, who fired 65 to the low round of the day by two strokes. They ended at 13 under par. Last year's winner, Hideki Matsuyama, my guy, oh my God, he couldn't win. He was joined in fifth place by 2002 champ Jim Furyk and Mark Leishman. Tony Finau, Kevin Kisner, and Kevin Bradley tied for eighth at minus 11. And worth mentioning that with this win, Lingmuth goes all the way up to 71st from 201 that he was ranked on the world. And Jimmy Furyk, wow, number three in the world right now. What a season he's having. On the LPGA, Susanne Pedersen, finally she got a win. She posted a 369 on Sunday and hung on to win the Manulife LPGA Classic. She finished her 15th LPGA Tour win at 22-under. She had not won since late in the 2013 season. Brittany Lang, who was the 2012 champion, fired 7-under-65 on Sunday at Whistle Bear Golf Club to grab second place at minus 21. Marijo Uribe ended alone in third at 18-under. Christy Kerr, who had a share of the lead as late as the 9 holes, but bogey 4 in a row to close her round and slide into a share of fourth place at minus 16 with Min Jae Lee, Soyoung Ryu, and Jackie Conkolino. World's number one, Lydia Ko, finished tied for 27th at 10-under. And on the European Tour, yes, Swede's Alex Norén won the Nordea Masters title for the second time at PGA Sweden National in Malmo. He finished 4 clear of Denmark's Soren Kjeldsen, who won the Irish Open last week. And in greasy conditions, Norén, who won this event back in 2011, reeled off 15 consecutive pars, then closing birdie to win with something to spare. Norén, who is remarkable because he began the 2015 European Tour on a medical exemption but has enjoyed a great return to form. He has made the cut in all 12 tournaments he's competed this season. The victory will see him exempt on the circuit to the end of 2017. So, Fred, how about the weekend backspin for you this weekend?
Yeah, Carlos. Of course, I got to spend a little time at the Memorial this week, which is always great fun. Lingmuth and Rose, what a great playoff that was. Did you see Rose shank that ball out of the bunker at 18 and bonk that fan in the head? Ouch. That's why I don't like standing up on that hill. I always stay back. Way back by the car path. I don't get down there where those other people, stupid people, get. Jordan Spieth made a late charge and posted a great 65 on Sunday, but the top story of the week is Tiger Woods, 85 on Saturday, Carlos.
Here's I didn't want to talk about that.
I'm going to talk more about it in just a minute. I think you must be like CBS. They didn't want to talk about it either. Here's appalling third round 15 over par put in dead last in the field after scrambling to make the cut at 1 under par on Friday. As you mentioned, the man of your life, Suzanne Pedersen, finally got back to the winner's circle in Canada. Credits her work with Butch Harmon. She changed him at the beginning of the year and is paying big dividends. Brindley Lang posted her second 65 of the week on Sunday, but came up one stroke shy of Pedersen. Youngsters Hooyoo Kim and Minji Lee finished top 10, and Charlie Hall, Carlos, was T11. MB Park also, as you mentioned, finished T11. Lydia Ko was clear down T27. She's not been playing her best the last couple weeks. Maybe she's waiting to peak this week at a major. And that is the big story this week coming up. The LPGA Tour moves to Westchester Country Club for the KPMG Women's PGA Championship with its $3.5 million total purse. And on Champions Tour, Carlos, Mark Calcavecchia won. But his clubs took the brunt of some anger over the bad shots he hit. He broke two clubs on one hole. He broke one over his knee and another after missing the green on the same hole and snapped the shaft of that club by slamming it into the ground. Nonetheless, it worked. He got rid of the anger, and Calc picked up his first Champions Tour win since 2012. The player who appeared to have the best shot at overtaking Calcavecchia was Davis Love. But he stumbled down the stretch, playing in just his second senior event of the year. Love birdied 4 of 5 holes and pulled to within a shot of the lead. But with 3 holes to play, a bogey on 16 and a double bogey on 17 left him at -9, 3 back of Calcavecchia. Champions Tour also has a major this week, Carlos, the Constellation Senior Players in Massachusetts.
Yeah, like I tell you, it's getting to the heart of the season. We're going to be talking a little bit about that later on. That wraps up our week in Backspin. And right now, we're going to start right away with the Par 5 news presented to you by United Golf Network. And Fred, I know you're dying to talk about that 85. I'll take the fuck stand on this one, on Tiger Woods. But hey, Rory McIlroy is missing cuts. Tiger Woods is playing like me, and that's a lot to say. No, I wish I could play like that at 85. But anyway, and Phil Mickelson is not playing good either. So what's going on with these three players? The U.S. Open is next week.
Yeah, we got what in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here? Rory's missing the last two cuts in Europe after winning at Wells Fargo. Ricky Fowler evidently had too much Irish stew and missed the cut at the Memorial. And Phil Mickelson just finished 6 places ahead of Tiger in 65th place at 5 over par for the week of the Memorial. So, you know, Tiger scrambled to make the cut on Friday at the Memorial and then shot his worst score ever on the PGA Tour, an 85 on Saturday. His worst round, and it was ugly with a capital U. If you thought Tiger's 82 in Phoenix earlier in the year was bad, just about as bad as it could get, better think again. He finished dead last in the 71-man field at Muirfield Village. The only good thing I can say about it is he didn't find a convenient injury to quit and played solo in the last round on Sunday as the first man out. 52-year-old Vijay Singh finished T11 at 10 under par and beat Tiger by 24 shots, Carlos. 24 shots! Tiger missed shots both left and right on the course in which he has won 5 times. He has absolutely no swing with the long clubs that he can trust. Every day he came to the par 4 18th and using a 3-wood, hit it near the creek that borders the left side of the fairway. He hit it there on his way to a quadruple bogey 8, and 8, a snowman, at the last hole on Sunday. The miss there is to the right, into the bunker, and he can't miss it in the right spot. That is very bad for any professional golfer. We saw both Lingmer and Rose miss it into the right bunker off the tee at 18. That is the appropriate shot to avoid the creek where it pinches in on the left. Golfers that can't miss it in the right places are called amateurs, Carlos. They lose their spots on the PGA Tour very quickly. I also found it curious that CBS chose to nearly ignore the fact that Tiger shot that horrendous score. A couple of short mentions, and that was it. Tiger did admit in his interview on Friday that he needs to play more competitive rounds and is looking at each opportunity as a process. But with his 40th birthday rapidly approaching, he needs results sooner, not later. If you thought things looked bleak under Sean Foley's tutelage, Chris Como's consulting is looking disastrous. Is it too late for even Butch to help? Muirfield Village is a very difficult golf course and one that makes even the best golfers look silly. Right now, Tiger Woods is not even close to the best golfer category, and the golf gods invoke some serious karma on the former world number one. He will next tee it up at the U.S. Open Championship at Chambers Bay in a little over 1 week. He spent 2 days over 7 hours scoping out that tricky terrain and green complexes that the Robert Trent Jones designed last week, but that may not help, Carlos, if you can't hit it off the tee. The USGA takes great pleasure in inflicting pain and anguish on golfers, and if Woods does not perform better than he did last week, he'll be able to spend Father's Day at home in Florida. With the emergence of Jordan Spieth and Ricky Fowler, plus the dominance of world number one Rory McIlroy, youth has become the buzzword on the PGA Tour. The old guys like Tiger and Phil may pop up occasionally, post a good score, or even collect a win, but it appears those days are going to be few and far between. Hey, you're going to talk a little bit about Stevie getting back on the bag with Adam Scott?
Yeah, but before that, I'm just going to tell you, Jack Nicklaus gets asked more about Tiger Woods than ever he did before the golf ball. The only difference is the nature of the question. It's not anymore, do you think Tiger will break your record in the majors? Now it has become, what's wrong with Tiger? And the answer is, he doesn't know either anyway, so that's what he said.
Oh, he knows. He's just too polite to say. Tiger's messed
that's
up
why,
in
that's
the
why,
head,
that's
man.
Why Fox didn't want to say anything. They didn't know. They didn't want to say anything about it. But, yeah, hey, Hall & Oates is back. No, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Good one. I like that.
Hey, Adam Scott and Stevie Williams are going to reunite for the remaining major championships in this year. But, getting the band together, is going to help the Masters 2013 Masters champ regain his putting stroke. Scott, who has dropped from number one in the golf world to number 12, surprised observers when he announced Monday not that he was returning to an unanchored putting style, but that his semi-retired caddy, Stevie Williams, would rejoin him for the meat of the PGA Tour schedule. Looks like the tour has his next My Buddy commercial all but in the can. The duo teamed up to capture what Stevie Williams called the greatest win in his career. That was the 2011 Bridgestone Invitational, as well as Scott's most impressive victory, the 2013 Masters. I know you like that one. They split up at the end of the 2014 season when it appeared that Williams' plan to work part-time going forward was not to his boss' liking. The breakup was far friendlier than Williams parting with Woods, who fired his longtime looper in 2011 and seemed to have left the door open for potential reunions. Looks like that right opportunity for caddying on a part-time basis will begin at the U.S. Open next week. Scott, who gave caddy Mike Kerr his working papers last week, said in a statement he would have Williams by his side at Chambers Bay, the British Open, for the fourth anniversary of their Bridgestone victory and the PGA Championship. No doubt, having Williams' guidance will be helpful for Scott, who has one top 10 finish, two missed cuts, and a T38 at the Masters in 9 tour events in 2015 without the Kiwi handing him the clubs. But an even increased comfort level for Scott does not address the broomstick-sized elephant on the green. He has tinkered with a conventional length putter earlier in this year, but after mixed results, however, he went back to jamming his old faithful 49-inch Scotty Cameron Fiosura X under his chin and remains loyal to that stick with which he three-jack away the 2014 Australian PGA Championship. He accumulated another 3 shots from short distance at last month's Players' Championship, and with performances like those, it's no mystery that Scott's putting stats have plummeted from 55th to 191st on tour in the all-important strokes gained putting category. Fred, perhaps William can plumb up those three-footers, but despite Steve's calming influence, it's unclear how the presence of his old buddy will help him drop anchoring, which he will have to do by January 1st, no matter who's going to be handing him the luggage.
Hey, what I really want to know, though, Carlos, you know, can we get the Beatles back together? That would be something. Hey, NBC must have saved so much money from laying off those Golf Channel employees last week that they could offer a huge fee to the RNA for the rights to the Open Championship beginning in 2017. Unless ESPN opts out of the last year of their contract, NBC Golf Channel will begin then next year in 2016. Everyone is saying golf is dead, and we have Fox paying $1 billion for the rights to the USGA events, and now NBC is paying double what ESPN was offering for the Open Championship over the last several years. As part of the deal, Golf Channel will get to air coverage of a men's major for the first time, and the move back to broadcast television from exclusively on cable is expected to improve audience size and visibility, reportedly the most important factor for the RNA. The Open Championship coverage will be live on NBC, avoiding any potential criticism for network that is often tape-delayed Olympic and tennis coverage. It's also a major victory for the Comcast-owned networks, which lost out to Fox Sports for the right to broadcast USGA events. RNA Chief Executive Peter Dawson said, "We are delighted to announce that from 2017, the Open will be broadcast by NBC Sports Group. They have unparalleled experience in golf and have demonstrated a unique desire to showcase and promote the Open and the RNA's elite championship through their extensive range of channels and digital platforms. The United States is home to millions of fans of the Open, and we know that through NBC Sports Group, they will enjoy world-class coverage of the championship." Just a note, Carlos, ABC started carrying the British Open in 1962. Its most recent deal, signed in 2008, moved all four rounds over to ESPN. ESPN was scheduled to carry the tournament in 2017, but the RNA opted out of that final year to sign with the NBC Sports Group. And NBC will pay an average of $50 million per year for more than 10 years. I'm not real great at math, but I think that's about $500 million, an amount that doubles the current $25 million per year from ESPN. NBC opted both ESPN and Fox, which made an aggressive play for the rights. The RNA was most impressed by NBC's commitment to market the event along the lines of Breakfast at Wimbledon, which the network pioneered in the 70s around the Wimbledon finals. Now we can have breakfast at the old course, Carlos.
And tea. You have to add the tea.
And tea. I forgot the tea. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, Kieran would have corrected us there. Hey, so
maybe we can have a little single ball, too, with that, huh?
Yeah. Hey, you remember Michael Jackson, the late, right, with his moonwalk, right? Oh, he seemed
Absolutely.
To glide going backwards with that moonwalk. Well, Nick Faldo make him look like a kid with the moonwalk he did, you know.
A little two-step there, didn't he?
Yeah, oh, man, he looked so good in this one. But anyway, three-time Open champ Nick Faldo said earlier this year that the Open Championship this July at St. Andrews would be his last. Well, you know, for a change, he changed his mind. Faldo, who will turn 58, on Saturday of this year's Open Championship, announced on Monday that he will continue to play in the game's oldest major through the 2017 edition. The reasons he gave on his Twitter message for this weird decision, and I'm going to read his tweet. It said, "Neil Plan, Troon was first Open I attended, and Birkdale, the first I played. 15 will be the last at St. Andrew, but I plan to be fit. Play two more." Well, his decision will now allow Tom Watson, who's retiring from the Open, to stand alone in the spotlight whenever he crosses Wilkin Bridge for the last time, be it Friday or Sunday. But that decision has come with a plethora of negative and positive responses. Some think Sir Nick should follow in the footsteps of Greg Norman, who was very public about his desire to let youngsters have a chance by not taking a volleyball slot every year. But Faldo, it seems, does not agree with Norman, and for someone that has been vocal in the past about Rory McIlroy's work ethic not being strong enough, it does seem odd that he is willing to keep hard-working young golfers from making the Open. other welcomes the news, and we're looking forward to seeing Paulo in action. And I am with the ones who think it's a real shame that slots at the Open still go to golfers that quite obviously have no chance of winning it. Over to you, Sir Nick, to prove me wrong by making the cut. The more I think about it, I say that he didn't want to share the spotlight with Watson at the Swilken Bridge and have it all for himself in 2 years. Paulo hasn't made the cut in an Open since 2005 when he finished in the top 15. The last time Paulo played at Royal Birkdale, he finished T44th, and that was in 1998. Last year, Paulo shot rounds of 76 and 77 at Royal Liverpool. Fred, what do you think? Should Sir Nick be playing? Can he really win or even make the cut?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, if he wants to play, go out on the senior tour or something, I guess. You know, he probably doesn't have a chance. But on the other hand, I understand he has earned the right to play in the Open Championship. He won it, three times? So, you know what? If he wants to play, let him play. The other young guys will just have to earn their spots. If they want to make it in, qualify. That's all I can say. Once they win three, more power to them. Hey, big surprise here. This is a complete shocker. This really amazed me when I read this. Brace yourself, West Virginia. The Mary Mex is fixing to blow into the Greenbrier. I bet Sam Snead's rolling over in his grave. He held the prestigious post of head professional at the Greenbrier for 58 years. 3 years after Snead's death, Tom Watson was named professional emeritus for the Greenbrier and held the post until earlier this year. In 2009, the Greenbrier was forced into bankruptcy after losing $166 million in 2008. West Virginia businessman Jim Justice bought the resort and has pumped hundreds of millions of dollars into the historical, just beautiful place, and it's unbelievable. But anyhow, last week he announced Watson's successor would be the Mary Mex Lee Trevino himself. Trevino won 29 times on the PGA Tour, including 6 major championships and 29 more titles on the Champions Tour. He is a perfect fit for the Greenbrier. I mean, he has such a warm and budding personality. He's very approachable, loves the game. He's an enjoyable person to be with, and he's going to be a real big treat for West Virginia for sure. Trevino will spend a great deal of time at the resort, and that seems to be what was most appealing to Justice. He'll be at the Greenbrier for all of June and July and the bulk of August, and will be no stranger to guests and visitors. Can you see him just walking out there and just talking to people, riding a cart around and chatting up a foursome that's out there playing and greeting people on the first tee? That'll be a hoot. It'll hold up play because he won't shut up. He'll keep talking, you know.
Lee, let me play.
Yeah, exactly. Let me have a shot, man. Shut up. Justice said, Tom Watson was a wonderful golf emeritus, but he wasn't able to be here much. I think this will be much more in tune with the legend of Sam Snead and what the Greenbrier wants. It just fits what we're all about. You know, it's hard not to like Lee Trevino, and it's hard not to smile when you see him. Trevino ranks the 14th greatest golfer of all time by Golf Digest in 2000. Does have a history at the Greenbrier. He was a member of the 79 U.S. Ryder Cup team, which defeated Europe that year. He's been to the Greenbrier several times since and even played the Greenbrier-owned Oakhurst Links, the first golf course designed and built in America. I guess now we understand why the Greenbrier split with Watson earlier this year. Justice wanted someone that was more available to guests of the resort. Trevino is certainly one of the most approachable and popular golfers in the world and should be a perfect addition to the Greenbrier. Good luck to him, Carlos.
Good luck to him, and hopefully, you know, he can let people play. But when you told me about this thing, I really had to check. You know, I was going to tell everybody, it's just a quick reminder, it's April Fool's Day today, but no. We're in June.
It just took me completely by surprise, too. Yeah.
But anyway, good luck to him, and hopefully, you know, he'll have a successful run there. Hey, you know, pro golf will return to Wisconsin annually beginning in 2016 when the Champions Tour debuts the American Family Insurance Championship at University Ridge Golf Course in Verona next June. The American Family Insurance signed a 3-year agreement to be the tournament's title sponsor. This will be an 81-player field that will last over 3 days, as most Champions Tour events do. Players will compete for a $2 million purse. Pre-GA Tour pro Steve Stricker, native of Edgerton, Wisconsin, and a 12-time PGA Tour winner who played golf at the University of Illinois, will be the host of the new tournament to debut June 24th to the 26th next year and was in hand for the announcement. The PGA Tour hasn't had a regular stop in the state since ending the Greater Milwaukee Open, known as the U.S. Bank Championship from 2005 to 2009 after the 2009 event. But the state is on an upswing with the sport. The PGA Championship will be played at Kohler-Whitson Straits in August for the third time. It also hosted the event in 2004 and 2010, as well as the 2007 U.S. Senior Open. And in 2020, the Ryder Cup will be played there for the first time. The U.S. Open will also come to Wisconsin in 2017 when Erin Hills Golf Course will host Golf's National Championship, the first time the event has been held in the state. Stricker won't be on the course for the inaugural tournament next year at University Hills. He'll be a year short of qualifying to play on the Champions Tour, which is for players over 50. But the popular Stricker will become a player host starting in 2017 when he becomes eligible for the Champions Tour and surely will be drawing card among the 50 and older crowd on tour. And the proceeds from the tournament will benefit the Steve Stricker American Family Insurance Foundation and the American Family Children's Hospital. So there's a good cost in the mix as well. Paul Van Pelt won the final PGA tournament held in the Greater Milwaukee area in 2009, bringing an end to a 42-year run of the PGA Tour play around the city. So great to see them back again having a tournament there in Wisconsin. So, Fred, that's wrap up. That wraps up all I have to say. So back to you on the Par 5 News.
Hey, and the Par 5 News was presented by United Golf Network. United Golf Network wants every golfer to enjoy the game more and have the opportunity to earn some money while doing it. They offer a top line of golf products, including popular name brands like Nike, Wilson, Greg Norman, Ashford, TaylorMade, Adidas, and Where to Win. Everything a golfer needs, clubs, balls, bags, shoes, apparel, and accessories, are available through United Golf Network with discount coupons for huge savings. United Golf Network not only has an excellent product line, it also offers every golf nut the chance to earn commissions on product through their director's program. United Golf Network provides instant and free access to Global Affinity, which offers discounted travel through Wyndham Endless Vacations. Another free perk is membership to My Golf in U.S., which offers discounted golf in 16 states and 3 Canadian provinces. And finally, for sale by owner, allows you to sell used or new equipment online. Visit UnitedGolfNetwork.com today and check out the products, discounts, and their opportunity, Carlos.
And remember that United Golf Network was created by entrepreneurs to give golfers the opportunity to play golf, make money, and enjoy life. That wraps up our United Golf Network presenting the Par 5 News. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to have our VIGs of the week, Jay Haas, and the interviews from Jeff Manor. Don't go away. Well, we're having some problems on Block Talk Radio with the audio, so the commercial didn't went through. But so we're going to go right to our VIGs. Hopefully we can play them. So they have been recorded. We're having a little trouble here. So let me see if we can, Fred, I can take care of this a moment. Here we go. Let me see if I can play this again. Okay, Fred. Let's see if we can play the first one. We're going to have starting Jay Haas. So if you can tell us a little bit about the interview before I try to start playing it again.
Yeah, Jay came into the into Columbus last week and was at the Memorial on Wednesday and did a little press conference with KJ Choi was there representing the international team. Tim Finchin was there, Jack Nicklaus, talking about the President's Cup coming up at the end of the summer over in South Korea. Going to be a pretty big deal. And so when it was over, I grabbed Jay for a second, and he was kind enough to sit down and talk with me. And we talked a little bit about the team, who's kind of outside the line right now, and a little bit about the venue over there. So, yeah, if you can play it, Carlos, try and cue that up.
Let's see. Let me just one moment before we try it again. Just one second. Let's see if we have Jay Haz here for you. Okay, I'm going to try it again. Let me see. It's not getting through any audio.
Oh, man.
We apologize.
That's too bad. We got these great interviews tonight.
Yes.
Fantastic. We had two interviews from Westchester today. Jeff Menor is our kind of man inside the ropes out there this week, working with the LPGA players with Scratch Golf, and he's doing double duty, getting some interviews for us. And he talked to David Ledbetter today, and he talked to Gene Bartholomew, who is a teaching pro now down in Palm Beach at PGA National, but has made the field three times it used to be the LPGA. Now it's the Women's PGA Championship.
We're talking with Jay Haas, the captain for the U.S. Ryder, U.S. President's Cup team this fall in South Korea. And, Jay, I know you're starting to think about the team makeup. You're looking at the top of the board. Maybe who are some younger guys? I mean, you've got Patrick Reed. You've got Jordan Spieth. You got Ricky. Some of these young guys are going to make a nucleus of the team. Who are maybe some other younger guys you're looking at, maybe outside the number right now, that maybe you want to get on the team?
Well, looking on the list here, you got Ryan Moore at the 14th position right now. Ryan's never played on a President's Cup team or a Ryder Cup team. And he's been right there so many different times. So I'm looking for him to have a really good summer and maybe play his way on. He's been very consistent so far this year, and I'm looking for him to make a charge toward the end. Webb Simpson, I kind of think he's still a young guy. He's still in his 20s. You know, he's right there at number 16. Kevin Na, who is a Korean-born American citizen who would play for the U.S. team, he is number 17, and he has played as consistently as any player on the PGA Tour this year. I don't know how many top 10s he's had, probably six or seven top 10s on all different types of golf courses, long courses, short courses. He is he's somebody that I certainly have my eye on. And again, with a good summer, any of these guys could move into the top 10. Gary Woodland had a great match play tournament. He is capable of turning it on any time, probably capable of dismantling any golf course out there. He's a very long hitter. Billy Horschel is a guy who played well at the end of last year, winning the FedEx Cup, and everybody's saying, gosh, I wish he'd have been on the Ryder Cup team. He was the hottest player in golf. He's number 19 right now, so so much can change with the majors being double points of the FedEx, and you know he could play his way onto it easily also. Ben Martin is a guy who's at 20th position, and then you've got Harris English after that, Robert Streb, Brendan Todd, Matt Every, Russell Henley is in 27th position. You think, well, he's way behind, but I think Ricky Fowler went from 17 to 4 or something when he won the Players, so things like that can happen very quickly, and I would love all of those guys to play their way on. I think that the younger, the better. I certainly, Jim Furyk is on the team right now. He is in, I think, the sixth or seventh position. Matt Kuchar has been solid. You've got some guys who have been up there for a while, but I wouldn't mind an influx of new talent and fresh faces and guys who are really hungry.
How has this captain thing affected your golf this year? This is a little different role for you. It looks like you're enjoying it, though.
No, I really am. I was the assistant the last three times when Fred has been the captain, and I didn't have as much to worry about prior to the President's Cup. This time it's been a little bit more hectic, but really not that much of my time. And I frankly haven't played very well myself this year, and I would like to blame it on the President's Cup and the duties, but I really can't. It hasn't been a good start for me this year, and hopefully the summer months will bring me some better golf, and I can act like a player and act like I know what I'm talking about when I'm leading these players over in South Korea.
We heard Jack talk a little bit about the golf course in South Korea and the whole facility there. Have you been over there to view the golf course?
We played a Champions Tour event there in 2010 and 11, and I played in 2010. And then I went over again in November last year. We did a media day And the course has matured really nicely. It was just opened in 2010, and maybe it opened the year before. So it wasn't quite ready when we were there. It wasn't quite grown in like they wanted to. As we were there in November, the course is magnificent. The greens are beautiful. The fairways are tight, good lies. It's matured nicely, and it's a core golf course, meaning there's no homes in between any of the holes. The spectators can access all the holes very easily. There's some number 14 is a drivable par 4, which will be an exciting feature in match play. What we'll have, the 15th hole is a two-shot par 5 that with water that guys will be challenging. So there'll be some exciting shots played there, some exciting moments in match play that the course will lend itself to that. So we're excited to be there at that golf course, and I think for the American players, playing a Jack Nicklaus course is a little comforting than saying going to a, I don't know what, if you would call it a true international course, if there's any such thing, but it does not seem to be anything that we would be surprised about.
Well, Jay, we certainly want to wish you all the best and good luck going forward, and thank you so much for taking a minute to talk to us.
My pleasure. I'm really looking forward to it. Should be a good tournament that week.
There you have it. We were able to play GS.
Good job. You're a technical wizard there, Carlos.
Well, we still have two more.
Don't brag.
Let's cross our fingers. Hey, one thing I wanted to note about Jay Haas interview. He mentioned that he was all for, you know, getting some younger talent, hungrier talent, and I think that's going to be, you know, he mentioned about Jamie Furyk, definitely. We talked about him, number 3 in the world right now. He's having a great season. Definitely a player to be there. But the opportunity that he's open to having those younger players coming to the President's Cup is going to be very helpful and very productive, because those players are going to get that exposure and that experience looking forward to the Ryder Cup.
You know, Carlos, you know, we've seen the U.S. team just kill the international team the last several competitions. And, you know, Jack Nicklaus made an interesting point. You know, he said on paper, the international team should be the best team. They have the biggest area to draw from. They have great players on the team, and they lose. The U.S. team looks to be on paper always better than the European team in the Ryder Cup, but the Europeans beat the U.S. in the Ryder Cup lately. So you can't figure this team thing out. You know, he said that's what makes it unique, and he says he hopes they really don't change the President Cup format because they can't hide anybody. Everybody has to play, you know, and that good thing. So. But yeah, he made some really good points during the press conference also.
Yeah, it's a great point. And I'm really looking forward to see who's going to be on that team on the President's Cup later this year. Well, our second interview is going to start with our man on the inside the ropes is Jeff Manor. He's the head teaching profiting pro at Pro Golf Academy and Teaching Technologies LLC director. And the first one is with David Ledbetter. As you all know, he's a leading golf instructor from England, and he's very well known for being the one that worked with Nick Faldo when he rebuilt his swing and then went on to win 6 major championships. But he has also worked with Nick Price, Charles Howard III, Michelle Wee, and currently world's number one LPGA player Lydia Ko and Ben Ann, who recently won the BMW PGA Championship. He also worked for 18 years with Ernie Els. So, you know, his latest book is The A-Swing, The Alternative Approach to a Great Golf. This is a simpler and more efficient way to swing the club. So tell us a little bit about this short interview that Jeff did with David Ledbetter.
Yeah, they were. He was out on the range, and David had been working with some players there. And I guess it was kind of a challenging day-to-day. The players were coming in and out and in and out because of the weather. And he had a chance. He knows David real well and had a chance to talk to him. So he just turned on the recorder and recorded a short interview for us.
Let's play it.
Hi, I'm here with David Ledbetter, swing coach to some of the players out here on the LPGA Tour. And David, I just wanted to ask you, what do you do with players this close to a major tournament when it comes to working with them? I saw you on the main swing area and also in the short game area and the putting green. What exactly are we working on?
Most of these players, obviously, I know their swings inside out, and we're just really reminding them, just tweaking, doing little things, really just to sort of get their mind focused into the positive stuff. And it's nothing new, that's for sure. I mean, not going to be working on anything new, certainly this week. You know, for the most part, as I think as a coach just builds confidence in the players to say, yeah, you're looking good. I mean, you know, you're always working on something in this game.
More of a repetitiveness type thing, situation. It's something just kind of like a friendly reminder of what we've been working on and just so that it's fresh in their head. And have you talked to any of the girls about the course and what type of conditions they're dealing with this week?
Well, I haven't actually been out there yet. I'm really looking forward to looking at it. I haven't been here since the last men's tournament here, which was a number of years ago for sure. But by all accounts, the girls really like it. It's a ball striker golf course, so you know, and we've got several good ball strikers in our camp. So it's going to be a good week for the players that really can strike it well. And you know, par's going to be a good score, and you know, if you can get some birdies along the way, then that's going to be great. But it's a great golf course for somebody really striking solid.
Yeah, I was looking at some of the putting going on in the putting green, and it looked like they're running pretty good. What do you think they're going to be on the stent meter for this week?
Apparently they're going to be somewhere between 10 and 11, which, you know, it's pretty quick for the girls.
Well, yeah, but the undulation here.
Undulation,
here. So.
But, you know, they're getting ready for the US Open, so, I mean, this is obviously a great event to get warmed up for it.
All right. David Tech, appreciate it very much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
There you have it. That was the interview with David Ledbetter. 10 or 11, did he say? This is, wow. They're going to have to
stop
their
that's a Westchester. Yeah, that's a Westchester. You know, at in Muirfield, Jack had them 13, and they were pushing 14. So 10, 11, that's fairly fast for the women. But you know that the USGA is going to want to push Lancaster Country Club up around 12 to 13. You know, they're trying to get ready for that, Carlos.
They better hang on. They better hang on for that.
Well, or if you remember last year, Pinehurst, the greens were almost, you know, unplayable. If you remember, they were like tabletops. And, you know, those humped greens, the balls was bouncing off of them like ping pong tables, you know. So and that's what the USGA wants. And if it happens to get dry for the next couple of weeks before they get to Lancaster, you know, that's what they'll have.
Yeah, it's the first time the PGA of America is taking charge of this tournament. So, ladies, hang on. You're in for a bumpy ride. So, we'll see. Hey, our last interview for the VIGs with Gene Bartholomew, who is one of many former tour pros turned teaching and club professional members. She played on tour from 1996 to 2007. She started teaching at the Creek Club on Long Island, but made her way down to the Sunshine State and currently lives in Palm Beach Gardens and teaches at the PGA National. But she will be playing, making her 10th appearance in an LPGA Championship this week. And Jeff Manor had this interview. So what do we have in this interview for it?
He's known Gene for some time, and she's also, you know, Jeff is a tour rep for Scratch Golf, Wedges, and Gene is also a tour player, a staff player for them. So he talked to her a little bit about the course, and a little bit about her making, this is her third appearance, you know, as a teaching pro to get three appearances in a major like that. That's pretty good.
Let's play the interview.
Okay, I'm back here at Westchester Country Club with Gene Bartholomew. Gene, you find your way back here again. How many years now have you been doing this?
This is my third year in a row qualifying by winning the Club Pro National Championship.
And you've done it 4 out of 5 now?
4 out of the last 5.
That's a feat. I don't think anybody else has ever done that before.
I guess probably not. Maybe I got a look on the men's side, but I don't think
now,
so.
I tried to look at it the other day, and I couldn't find anything.
Really?
So you've done something that I don't think anybody else has done before. But
wow.
I was on the golf course today. I want to get a little feedback from you. This has got a lot of meat to it.
Yeah.
And the undulation's unbelievable. I feel like you have to be a mountain goat out there.
Yeah, hilly. Westchester is very, very hilly.
The greens, they're mounded. They're very undulating. And it looks like if you don't have your distance control down, you're really going to get trouble out here.
I agree, and I think a lot of elevation changes on your shots into the green, so having a good caddy who's going to tell you how much up or downhill it's playing,
so the,
it's
the slope.
Important
you, you,
to get to the right spot on the green.
Right, so you're going to have to know your slope real good out here. So, yeah, I noticed the other thing that is kind of interesting is that I like to, when I play, I like to get into the groove of a golf course first, start slow and then get into the meat of it, but they start you right off with a 180-yard par 3.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you think about that?
Well, that's one of the quirks, the good things about Westchester. It's a little different where you have that par 3 starting hole. So I think I start on 10 on
little,
the first round. But, you know, we're going to have to start on the par 3 one of the 2 days. And
right.
It'll be different, but everybody's got to do it. And it's a tough par 3. I mean, if you can just land it just short of the green and let it hop on and two-putt and get out of there, it's a good way to start your round.
Well, I've done a few interviews today, and one of the things I've had troubles with, I keep wanting to say the LPGA Championship. We have something a little different this year. Now we're calling it the Women's PGA Championship.
Women's PGA Championship, yeah. It's a different, but it is a co-sanctioned event. It has a new name, and, you know, it's hard not to have the word LPGA in it, but it's an elevated major now.
Right.
I think there's big purse, great venues they're going to have it at, you know, prime network TV. So a lot of good things came despite losing the LPGA name.
Well, you've been a traveling pro for several years, and you kind of curtailed your pretty much teaching nowadays.
I'm a teacher now, yep.
You're doing what I
do
full time.
I do what you do, yep.
So, but it's great to see you out here, it's great to have you as a staff player, too, with Scratch Golf.
Yes.
I just got
my new wedges, so we're putting them to the test this week.
All right, Gene.
Thanks.
Good luck this week.
You're welcome.
Well, she definitely will put them to test. Not only her, everybody. So, hey, great thing that that's what Jeff mentioned. 4 out of the last 5. Wow, she still holds that competitive side. You know, so it's great to see her use that Class A status on the Blair Party to live to keep playing.
Yeah, that's one of the unique things about this tournament. When the PGA and the LPGA got together last year to host this, to co-sanction it, you know, they want to make sure they have that relationship like the PGA Championship has on the men's side, where they have, you know, Class A pros at the clubs earn a spot through the national championship in the field, and they've got this. And so I really think it's a good deal. And, you know, as we know, they raised the purse by $1.25 million up to $3.5 million for this thing this year. So really a good deal, and really good for Gene to be able to go back in the field again.
It's really good. Well, that wraps up our very important guest of the week segment. We're going to take a short break if the Block Talk allows us. We're going to play the commercial. And when we come back, we'll take the practice range. If not, we'll just take it right away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the practice range. Every week, Fred and I pick a topic, and we take our shots at it. That's why we call it the practice range. And this week, the topic is the time is now for the PGA, LPGA tours. You know, we're entering the heart of the golf season. Majors are all around. The KPMG Women's PGA Championship and the Senior Players Championship is this week. The U.S. Open is going to be next week. The U.S. Senior Open following the next week. And in July, there's going to be the U.S. Women's Open, the Women's British Open, also the Open Championship, and the Senior Open. Wow, there's going to be a lot of Opens in this next two months. So plenty to play for. All the top players are gearing towards that, especially the starting to talk about the PGA Tour, you know, the U.S. Open you talked about earlier, about Rory missing cuts, Tiger Woods playing not like Tiger Woods. Phil Mickelson, I don't read too much into it. The U.S. Open comes up, and he just, like, flips the switch, and he starts playing, like, crazy. But, you know, we have the Jordan Spieth winning the Masters, and there's a lot of things that's been talked about him and his caddy having the home field advantage. So there's a lot of... a lot of expectations on Jordan Spieth, Ricky Fowler finally winning the Players' Championship, Jim Furyk, oh, wow, he's playing awesome, and, there's a lot of people looking forward to the U.S. Open and also to the majors later in the season. So what's your take on what's going on, at least on the PGA Tour?
Well, as you mentioned, Carlos, I mean, this is really the next 12 weeks in all of golf, but especially on the PGA Tour, a lot of money. They're playing for a tremendous amount of money, tremendous amount of FedEx Cup points. They're playing to get on the President's Cup team. It's just a big deal. And then even in the off weeks when they're not majors, you got the lesser players that are outside the 125, the rookies, and some of the guys that haven't played that well at the beginning of the year. They're trying to earn FedEx Cup points and money to get into the 125. To get into the top 125, to get into the FedEx Cup playoffs, and to keep their card for next year. So this is the meat of the season. This is really the time when you got to knuckle down and you really got to get it done. You got guys that are hurt. They got sore shoulders. They got sore backs. They got legs that are bothering. Hands or wrists. And they're playing through it. They're trying to get it done. So these are the things we don't see all the time and hear about all the time. But this is really the dog days over these next 12 weeks, man. This is where these guys earn their money. It looks very glamorous, but just like Jeff was talking about walking Westchester today, how hilly it is. A lot of these golf courses are hilly, and it's just a grind day in and day out on the body. In addition to all the travel that they do. So just to give you some ideas, Carlos, in the next 14 weeks, we've got on the PGA Tour, we've got three majors plus the WGC Bridgestone and four FedEx Cup playoff events. Eight big events in 3.5 months. You've got the U.S. Open is a $9 million purse. The Open Championship is a $9.2 million purse. WGC Bridgestone is $9.2 million. And the PGA, that's a $10 million purse. Then you're going to throw in, these guys are trying to get in the FedEx Cup playoffs through these events. Then you get into the playoffs, and you're paying for $33 million in FedEx Cup purses plus $35 million in bonus pool money. So you got $115 million in those eight events, Carlos, that's on the line. So if you're a pro golfer, this is what gets your attention. Yeah, they'll all tell you they want to win the cups and the trophies and the green jackets, and all those are really nice, and that's really good stuff. But for most of these guys, they're not playing for those. They're playing for this money. That's why they're doing it. And so the time is now. I mentioned some of the lesser tournaments. You got the Travelers, the CVS, Greenbrier, John Deere, Barbersol, Canadian Open, Quicken Loans, Barracuda, and the Wyndham. That totals another $38 million in prize money that you got some of the guys that, not the names that you don't hear all the time, but they're the ones that are trying to grab up some of that money and get into the top 125. So, you've got a lot to play for. You got, the conditioning that they do, the workouts that they do, the physical training they do. You've got the travel. They need the strength. They need the stamina. This is exactly what they do all of that training off the course for. I'm pretty sure we saw that this week with Ricky Fowler having a really tough week playing in the conditions that he played in at Royal County Down last week, the week prior over in Ireland, and then hopping on a plane, flying over to Columbus. A lot of time changes, coming there and trying to play Muirfield and missed the cut. I mean, and he was close. He just missed it by one shot. So he didn't play that poorly. He was even par, but just didn't quite make the cut there. And, for Ricky Fowler to place like that, I mean, he that's his kind of course that he likes. It's difficult, and that's where he plays well. So I really think the time change and travel was a tough thing for him this week. which is a good thing. He gets a couple more days of rest. He might get out to Chambers Bay and get a couple days of work in out there and take some rest and get ready to go next week. So, and I've just been talking about the PGA Tour, Carlos. I'm going to go on and just real quickly talk about the women also, because in this time frame, you've got a lot of things trying to go on the women's tour also. You got Envy Park is trying to catch Lydia Ko for number one. And I think she's really trying to do that. It looks to me like she's serious about that. Majors that are coming up give her a better opportunity because there's more money. The purses are bigger, especially like this week, $3.5 million purse. Stacey Lewis has not gotten hot yet this year, and she seems to be pacing herself. You know, look for her in these majors, especially Westchester. It's a shot-maker's course. You heard Jeff talk a little bit about that and David Ledbetter. Lydia Ko, Stacey Lewis, probably two of the best shot-makers on tour. Wouldn't be surprised to see both of them at the top. And you've got Suzanne Pedersen, who just won the Manulife Classic. She appears to be healthy now and ready to compete for major titles again. So, you know, she could be a real factor over the next few weeks. Lydia Ko has not won a major. She's looking for her first major title. Lexi Thompson with her length, and if she gets a putter going, she's always a threat. She has a major looking for more. And then, Carlos, you've just got that depth of young women on the LPGA Tour. I heard an interview with Dottie Pepper today, and she was saying that the average age right now on the LPGA Tour is 24 years old. That is unprecedented. That is really young for the average age to be 24. I don't know. I'm sure, the Bombers, maybe this week so much, not so much a factor. But like I said, also those ball strikers, you got Christy Kerr, So Young Ru, could very well have a good week this week. And I'm sure putting will be crucial. And so if you good best putters, you got Envy Park, Paula Kramer, and a couple other women in there. So it's an important time of the year. I always love golf right now. It's always fun to watch them at the beginning of the year because we've got snow and cold here, and I love to see the sun and the palm trees of Hawaii and the West Coast when we're drowning in the snow here in the cold weather. But this time of year, this is when these guys are grinding out. They've already played 27, 28, 30 weeks. They got another 13, 14 weeks to go until they see the end at the end of the tunnel, and they're really grinding right now, Carlos.
They are, and look out for Envy Park. She's definitely serious about getting to Lydia Ko, like you mentioned. And remember, she has won the last two women's PGA championships, so she has to be one to be taking notice of this week in Westchester. And definitely Suzanne Pedersen, I think that, I don't know, that change of switch of coaches and caddies. She's working now with Butch Harmon, and also that she had been battling through an ongoing shoulder injury, which has forced her to miss several events. If not for that, I think the win could have come sooner for her, and that's going to be great. And remember all this also, there's Solheim Cup year for the ladies this later this year. So watch out. A lot of things are coming down in the summer in the next 10 to 12 weeks. Well, that wraps up our practice range, and now we're going to go right into our final putt. So I'm going to take the first putt, and I'm going to talk about Medina, who could host the BMW Championship. Medina Country Club members will vote June 13 on whether to be the host for the 2019 BMW Championship. A yes vote would be a boon to the golf fans who want to keep Chicago in the FedEx Cup playoff rotation. Conway Farms and Lake Forest will have the BMW Championship this fall, and in 2017, completing its three-tournament run, Conway Farms eventually could get back in the BMW Championship rotation, but Western Golf Association organizers targeted historic Medina for the 2019 event. Medina, as you all know, has had five majors and was the site for the 2012 Ryder Cup. Fred, I know you have a couple of stories and one very nice on a Jim Dodson note, so take your time. We have some few minutes extra to play with, so take your time.
Yeah, I got a couple things, Carlos, here to wrap up with tonight. Golf lost a real pioneer this week. Johnny Durr, who was the kind of like the unofficial Chamber of Commerce public relations department for Piners, he was everywhere down there, meeting everyone with a friendly handshake, a humorous story, a really outgoing gentleman. died last week, last Saturday. And Jim Dodson wrote a really nice piece on his Facebook page. Jim, of course, a good friend of the show. And I'll read this real quick. Saturday evening, aptly minutes after American Pharoah captured the first Triple Crown in 37 years, we learned my dear friend John Doerr, the beloved founder of CBS Sports and pioneering broadcaster, passed away. John was 97 years old, the man personally responsible for bringing horse racing, golf, college football, and so much more to early television, a treasured family friend and intimate mentor of many long years who helped me with no less than four books on golf with his encyclopedic memory of 20th century events he personally witnessed and a wry perspective you simply won't find anywhere in the sportscasting world these days. In a word, he was the best. Heaven just received its finest play-by-play man ever. Godspeed, John. Give my best to Slam and Sam Snead. When you see him, Wendy and I will miss you at supper. So Pinehurst loses a really great resident there, a great gentleman. I got to meet him one time when I was down there a couple years ago. So also, you know, we didn't talk about it, but open qualifying was this week, Carlos. Some names that made it through sectionals, Lee Jansen, Jamie Lovemark, you got Billy Hurley III, you've got Sam Saunders made it, Michael Putnam, let's see, who else here, Retief Goosen made it. He played in Columbus, finished really well, had a great tournament, the Memorial, jumped in a plane Sunday night, flew down to Memphis, and fired a first round 64, and then ended up making the field there for Chambers Bay. Brian Harmer, Andrews Romero, also in. Let's see who else
Luke
here.
Luke Donald qualified.
Luke Donald got in. Yeah, exactly. Luke got in. So a lot of big names got in this week, and should be a pretty strong field again. Of course, Judy Rankin starts a new charity. That wants to help young girls become golfers as juniors. And I know we're out of time, so I'll shut up, Carlos, and turn it back to you.
Just quick mention on other qualifiers there. 15-year-old Cole Hammer will be the youngest player in this field this year, but he was not going to be the youngest player ever. Andy Chan was 14 in 2012. But to mention, Steve Stricker is not going to be making it. Vijay Singh, David Lingmuth, who just won, didn't make it, and Harris English. So that wraps up another week of the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf, and thank you for listening to us for the past hour. Special thanks to our VIG's very important guest of the week, Jay Hess, and thanks to Jeff Manor for bringing David Ledbetter and Jim Bartholomew. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio, and also through TuneIn or download our show on iTunes. If you haven't done so, follow the show. Our Twitter ID is @Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alvader. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.